afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, and I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today's Friday, August 11th, 2017. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Well, we had another good day, and I don't mean to have a deep sigh there, but it's kind of nice just to sit down for this program. It's been a hectic day, and a lot of strange things are going on, and I think everyone is holding their breath. I think they're trying to just do a little damage control for the markets to make sure that people don't go crazy. They were able to get some positive numbers out of the Dow, NASDAQ, and the S&P today, although they weren't all that strong. But gold today, and the aftermarket New York spot price is up almost $5 at $1,291. Silver was down 2 cents at $17.18. Platinum was up $7 at $992. And palladium was up $4 at $894. The USDX today is down 0.36 at 93.05. Crude oil was up a few cents, 0.14 at 48.73. 10-year yield was down 0.02 at 2.19%. And of course, the euro continues to climb up 0.49 at 118. Paper markets today, the Dow was up 16 points, 21,859. The NASDAQ was up 40 points at 62.56. And the S&P was up 3 at 2,441. European markets, London was down the most. I don't think that's was down over 1%. Hong Kong got hit again. It was down 2%. With the fears of what might happen with North Korea. The Fear and Greed Index, 28 for today. And that is in the fear side of things. So I don't know what's going on. It's just weird markets. I think everybody is just doing whatever they need to do. I guess they're glued to the news to find out what is going on, what might go on with in relationship to North Korea, Al. It's just been a sort of a bizarre type of markets. I'm shocked that the paper markets didn't drop today. I'm shocked.
Yeah, and why do you suppose that is? Do you have any idea?
Well, with just all the rhetoric that's going on between Trump and North Korea, which tells me that perhaps no one truly believes that war will come out of it, that something will be done to calm the tenseness that's going on between our president and North Korea. So we'll have to see.
I think the reason the markets aren't paying attention may be, we talked about this yesterday or the day before, an article that points out that 60% of all the trades on the stock markets right now are being handled by computers and computer algorithms.
I disagree.
If there were real people in the – and I've seen reports that ordinary people really aren't in the markets, haven't gone back to the markets after the crash 2007, 2008. They got burned. They left. It's mainly institutions and corporations and computers that are in the market right now. And they are not prone to emotional reactions. If the market was completely dominated by people the way it was previously, where it has been for most of its history, I would expect to get a big reaction out of what's happening in Korea. Right? But because the markets are at least 60% computerized, computers don't respond to things like wars or nuclear war. There was a movie many of the people probably saw. It was kind of a comedy. It was kids' film to some degree. It goes back, I think, in the 70s. I think it was called Global Thermonuclear War or something like that. But in any case, this kid finds a way to hack into the Defense Department's main computer, and he finds what he thinks is a game. And it's called Global Thermonuclear War. and he starts playing against the computer. And at one point, the kid asks the computer, the computer is capable of speech, asks the computer, is this a game or is this the real thing? And the computer says, what's the difference? From the computer's perspective, it's all just ones and zeros on the hard drive and the RAM. And the same thing's going on in the markets right now. Insofar as the markets are dominated by computers, they don't pay attention. From thermonuclear war, what's that mean? There's no emotional reaction coming out of those computers. And I think that might explain why the markets have been surprisingly complacent. Computers don't respond to emotional stimulus. So.
Well, I think this last bump up in the markets did have some private investors in there because they're the ones that always get in at the end of the game.
I know there's some, but not predominant.
People do control their 401s. They do control, and they can stop. They can sell the retirement investments and so forth. They can sell. So.
Yeah, I know they can, but I'm saying these computers,
you and I can make three sales a day, the computer can do three in a fraction of a second. I didn't expect it to be down 1,000 points by any means, but I did expect to see a little more pressure on it than just what we have seen. That's the surprising part. No, I wasn't expecting a 2,000 drop or 3,000 drop point in the Dow and so forth, but I did expect to see a little bit more pressure. A little bit more, and you just don't see really any panic whatsoever. So, from any direction, even gold. Gold should have been up $300.
Well, you know, this is, you know, we may be dealing with the same thing. I mean, by the time you get done with COMEX selling hundreds of paper ounces of gold for every physical ounce that's done with computers, in theory, how emotional is the COMEX market and the LBMA? I mean, it may be that they've taken the emotion out of the markets just by computerizing them.
It's panic. What? When fear comes in, there's two things that move markets, fear and greed. And if the markets don't move, then the fear isn't being registered as what the indicators are telling us. So there's two things that move markets, and that's pretty much it. And if this is my point is that doesn't seem that there is very little fear out there. And I don't care who moves them. Yeah, I get markets. I get these are rigged. I get they're manipulated, both gold, the paper, and so forth. I understand all that. But it still surprises me that we're only seeing $30 move in gold and 200-point drop in the Dow. So we'll see what next week brings us. What I found interesting today was let me see if I can bring this up here. U.S. Marines ground aircraft for 24 hours. And, of course, they did have two crashes. The Marines have suffered two deadly crashes in recent weeks. General Robert Neller, commandant of the U.S. Marine Corps, directed the U.S. Marine Corps' aviation units to conduct an operational reset for a 24-hour period where no flight operations will take place. But no operational commitments will be impacted, he said. The pause will affect all Marine Corps aircraft, including those with tilt rotors, helicopters, and fixed-wing planes. There were two crashes, and again, with fatalities. But it's just interesting.
Why did they crash? Do you have any idea?
Pardon?
Do you have any idea what caused those crashes?
There was two major ones. An MV-22 Osprey tilt rotor aircraft crashed last week while operating off the coast of Australia. Doesn't really say. There was a crash in Mississippi in July resulting in the death of 15 Marines. And that was very much in question, a transport plane. That was very much in question as for the... what was the true reason why that one crashed? I'm saying the timing of it is what's interesting. Here you have all this going on with North Korea, and they're coming out making an announcement that the Marines... Now, I don't know how much of an impact the Marines would actually have or actually be involved in any type of conflict. Maybe not at all. But to me, I'm thinking that if you're building up and you're drawing a line in the sand, why would you make this huge announcement that all these... aircraft from the Marines was being for 24 hours. I don't know.
It's kind of odd because the two vehicles, apparently the two different types of aircraft.
Yeah.
I mean, I can understand if an Osprey crashes and they decided, especially if you had two Osprey crash, I can understand that the Marines would say, okay, that's it. We're grounding all the Ospreys and we're going to look this over before we fly them anymore. I can get that. When we have two different kinds of aircraft that crash over a period of several months, I don't know what they're looking for there. What's the common denominator? They are implying that it's not a fault of the aircraft, not a fault of the pilot per se, but that something's happened administratively that's innate in the Marine Corps, and they're saying, we got to look at this, we got to see what's going on here.
Well, I think the main thing is that they're looking for increased defense spending. Basically, they're saying they need more repairs. Basically, they need to fix and replace what cannot be repaired. So they're looking for more money. But I still find, and I think it's odd, I'm not reading, you know, I'm not a conspiracy, you know, I'm not reading any, but I think the timing is odd. So, and I agree with you, two different aircraft.
Two different kinds of aircraft.
Yeah.
Looking for a common denominator that's not inherent in the design of the aircraft.
And what's
and
the 24-hour
period? The common
period?
Denominator is maintenance.
Why?
Maybe they've had to cut back on maintenance if they've been short on dollars. Maybe they've had to cut back on maintenance. Maybe that explains, maybe that has some bearing on the two crashes. Maybe that's what this is about.
But for 24 hours, what can you do in 24 hours? Like, what's the point?
Now, I don't know. They're looking for something administrative, it seems to me.
I don't know. But it's odd. The timing is odd. Mm-hmm. 24 hours is odd. And again, I don't know. You know, maybe if we have a Marine in the audience that knows, I mean, how much impact is this type of aircraft needed in any type of a situation if it did come about here in the, you know, in the next, you know, during the weekend? I don't know.
I don't. From what I understand, and I don't understand very much about this, but I don't believe the Osprey is an attack helicopter. I think it's designed for moving people in and out. I don't know that it's an attack vehicle. This other aircraft that crashed, taking 15 lives with it, probably not an attack vehicle. Probably not an attack aircraft, just transport.
Well,
it wouldn't be critical to some sort of a. You know, if there was a war coming on or whatever, they wouldn't be critical to that necessarily in the sense of getting out there and shooting at people. I don't know.
What's interesting is you'd make this type of an announcement when you supposedly have all this going on. What would your enemy think? Oh, wow, the Marines are... you know,
it doesn't necessarily... It's not, yeah, I mean... I don't know. I mean, the Marines may or may not have been online to play a significant role in North Korea to begin with. Maybe they are, maybe they're not. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is, you know, the restriction on Americans going to North Korea doesn't kick in until about another 3-4 weeks, which means, in theory, there are Americans in North Korea right now. And in theory, if we were to attack right now, some of those Americans might get killed. And maybe that's something that the Trump administration would rather not be. You know, don't want to be charged with killing Americans. So we've maybe got a couple of weeks. Well, I mean, this is like the Conor McGregor Floyd Mayweather fight. The fight may only last a couple of minutes, but the rhetoric has been going on for months, and it may be the same thing with Korea. And Donald Trump just jabber, and we'll see.
Well, you know, you mentioned yesterday that we would know something more today. I think it'll be this weekend that we'll really see what's going to happen. Because if he, you know, he made plans to shoot off four of them, we'll see if he does. If he doesn't, then he.
You're saying Kim Jong Un.
Correct. If he continues to shoot him off, you know, who's to say what happens after that? If he pulls back and doesn't do it, then it seems to me that he's looking for an out. So,
yeah.
And plus, I had a great conversation with someone today from the earlier program, but he listens to this one too. And he says, what do those missiles do to the floor bed of these oceans and seas? And you're talking about, and we know they do a lot of nuclear testing, you know, in various places, underwater testing. And at a time where we have, it's like we're having all these things coming together, you know, and you have this with North Korea. There's a lot of discussions on this, on the eclipse. There's an article here from, I don't know what state, but hospitals are stocking up on blood, rattlesnake bite antidote, because they're expecting animals to be acting odd during this eclipse. More than a million visitors
animals
are expected
to be acting odd during the
during this eclipse. Yes. For hospital systems from central Oregon to the coast, it will be all hands on deck in the run-up and aftermath of the eclipse. Without a precedent, planners have turned for advice to their counterparts in Sturgis, a town in South Dakota that attracts about 500,000 people for a yearly motorcycle, blah, blah, blah. St. Charles Health System, with hospitals and clinics in Bend, Raymond, Redmond, Primeville, and Madras, has an emergency plan scheduled for August 16th to the 23rd. They're expecting the local population to increase by 280,000, more than doubling. The hospital has canceled elective surgeries. It has limited time off and contracted to bring in nearly 16 traveling nurses. Administrators have also moved staff around, shifting doctors and nurses from non-clinical positions to the emergency room. They are expecting things to come unglued during this eclipse. It is largely considered to be the very best place in the country to watch the eclipse because of the geography and weather and patterns. And this is in Oregon. So they're expecting this huge group of people. I don't know what they're expecting. If people are going
to
turn into zombies or what.
Yeah, right.
But there's
a
lot of strange things coming all together. We talk about the
death. I don't know. You know what this sounds, you know what this reminds me of? The year 2000. Right? Oh my gosh, all the computers are going to die when they, you know, and what happened? I mean, if that was one of the most talked about and feared conspiracy ideas we've ever had in this country.
Well, I don't,
and it just turned into nothing.
Well, it did. It was something, you know. And yes, the, you know, the power didn't go off across the country and so forth, but it wasn't an event. It was a planned event, and people did exactly what they were supposed to do. But, and I think we're supposed to go to a break.
Probably so. It looks like the clock has mandated that we stop talking and put on some commercials, and Melody and I will do that and be right back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. TMUpRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
Yes, there's a lot of strange things that are going on, so folks, just prepare, be safe, keep an eye open, and just take care of yourself and continue to pray. J.C. Penney today revealed on Friday it lost more money than feared. The bleak news sent the stock plunging more than 15% below $4 a share for the first time ever. And yeah, JCPenney now is a penny stock. And that's the Wall Street's term for a company trading under $5. JCPenney said it lost $62 million in its second quarter. That's more than a year ago. The retailer also said the same store sales, a measure of how well stores open at least a year are doing, fell more than 1% during the quarter. So again, you can add JCPenney to the latest department store that has some very dismal results. We talked about Macy's yesterday, Kohl's, Dillard's. They've all reported declines on same store sales. And of course, their biggest competitor is Amazon and of course, Walmart. There were also some Capital One eliminates 400 call center jobs from its Rolling Metals office as customers rely less on call center services. The cuts will come from the company's service operations, which support the credit card call center. You also have Allstate. They're quietly laying off 500 people, employees this year. Most of these eliminated positions are casualties of a more efficient system. What do you think that is, Al?
It's one that hires employees who don't breathe or take tobacco breaks or go to the water cooler or the thunder box or any of the rest of it. These are little robots, and people are being replaced by the highly efficient and cheap robots.
That, and in addition to people have cell phones, all they have to do is take a photo of their damaged vehicles, and they'll send it, they'll text it. And yeah, you'll have a computer, a robot who will, you know, who will approve it, send out a check. So you need absolutely no human contact whatsoever. So
this is a great thing. We're going to have cars. You don't need a driver for the car. The computer will drive the car, and if it has a wreck, it'll automatically send in a photo, and another computer will write a check. And who does the check go to? To the robot driving the car, or I don't know. Maybe that'll be the one thing they keep us around for, Melody, so we can sign the checks.
I don't even think you need that anymore. Signatures aren't even important anymore. I mean, you go on and they want you to sign your signature with... Have you ever signed your signature with your finger on some of these computer things?
No.
I mean, it looks like a two-year-old...
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
It's like signatures don't matter anymore.
Yeah, I understand that.
And it used
but they
to be
record them electronically. You're just making your mark. It's like being a sailor on when they're out looking for Moby Dick or whatever. Make your mark that you signed on to the, and they're just making X's or something.
That's fine, but usually your X's will all look alike. Your mark will usually look alike, you know. But these signatures that you do where you write your my heavens. And it used to be important. I mean, you used to have to sign the back of your credit card. The signature had to match it. Not anymore. And it's so they're just eliminating anything that really confirms who you are, because you are becoming more of a number than anything else.
Becoming less and less relevant.
Less and less relevant.
You know, it's like we're talking earlier in the program about 60% of the stock market is run by computers right now. There are no people there. The computer programs are buying and selling. All right. They're going to drive your car. They're going to issue the checks on your fender benders and the rest of that sort of thing. We are becoming, you know, it's, you can't just say that we're becoming irrelevant. You can't just say we're becoming unnecessary.
We're becoming eliminated.
But it certainly looks kind of like that. It's one of those things where it would be a crazy idea 2 years ago, at least to me. And now I'm beginning to think, maybe it's not so crazy after all.
Payless, the shoe store, they came out of bankruptcy court protection after closing more than 673 stores. They emerged from the bankruptcy court protection on Wednesday, shedding more than $435 million in debt and closing approximately the 673 stores.
I've got a report here from USA Today, and the headline is as many as 160 Applebee's and IHOP locations to close. Mm-hmm. Parent company of Applebee's and IHOP plans to close up to 160 restaurants, and they don't say if they mean American restaurants or not. I'm thinking they mean American restaurants, but it says they don't specify that. And they do tell us later on in the article that the corporation actually has 3,700 plus restaurants in 19 countries. So Applebee's and IHOP are not confined to the United States. But that's where this gets interesting to me. Again, Applebee's and IHOP plan to close up to 160 restaurants, vastly boosting the number of eateries from the two comfort food chains that it plans to shut. At the same time, two chains will now open 125 restaurants globally between them in new locations. Now, this doesn't clearly say this, but it implies they're shutting 160 American restaurants and they're going to open another 125 globally, meaning in foreign countries. Right? That's the implication. They don't say it clearly, but that's the implication. Amy Mason, Senior Vice President for Global Communications and Computer Insights for the parent corporation on this, which I believe is... I don't see the name right in front of me, but in any case, she said, restaurant closures are a normal course of business in the industry. And when you have a footprint as large as ours, they are either older locations in lapsed trade areas where they were once vibrant retail, residential, and traffic characteristics are no longer present. Others are closed when they're underperforming with unsustainable economics. I get that. That makes perfect sense. All right. You know, sometimes the neighborhood changes, and it was a good idea 20 years ago, and now it's no longer a good idea to have a store there. I get that. But closing these well below average restaurants can have a positive brand benefit, since guests are no longer experiencing a substandard experience. Melody, you get many substandard experiences in restaurants? You know, this. I listen to this, I read this, and it may not be communicating it, but it strikes me that the woman who's speaking is just all normal. It doesn't mean a thing that we're closing 160 restaurants. That may be the truth. That may be exactly the truth. But I get the impression she's in charge of global communications. They're going to open 125 restaurants globally. It really sounds like they're kind of diminishing their presence in the United States. They're going to increase their presence in other countries, but maybe they're cutting their presence in the United States. And that isn't necessarily just because some of these stores are underperforming with unsustainable economics or residential and traffic characteristics. Vibrant retail, residential and traffic characteristics are no longer present. It sounds, if you're going to another country, it sounds like they're saying, goodbye, we're out of here. We're gonna start cutting bait. And I don't mean there's no they're still... I have no idea, but 1,000 and up IHOPs in the United States, 1,000 and up Applebee's in the United States. But it's one of those things you look at and you say, Are they telling us that they're closing, that they're beginning to diminish, not close, but diminish their presence in the United States when they expect to make better money, more money in foreign countries? Is that the implication here?
Well, I think, you know, we've been talking about retail, or I have, all week long. And a lot of your Applebee's are located in these centers where they had these huge malls. We have the Applebee's, you have the Italian restaurant, you have the seafood restaurant, you have, you know, all these neighborhood restaurants, these chain restaurants all together in all these major shopping malls. Well, the shopping malls are closing. They're not bringing the people to sustain not just the retail outlets, but everything that's around it. When we talk about the multiplier effect, you have one business goes down and it affects many more around them up to three times. So this is what I think they're saying. And I do believe as you go, and it doesn't say where globally that they're going to open, most likely China is where they're going.
Maybe so.
Because you have China,
as their
countries expand, their dietary habits change. They'll start eating more meat. They'll start eating out more often. And so, you know, it's the same thing that we've experienced here in the United States. China's experiencing the same thing. So, you know, they're closing the non-profitable ones here and opening them somewhere else where they can capture, you know, the funds.
Yeah, but when they talk about doing this globally, they are a multinational corporation, and they have, again, 3,500 different stores in 19 countries altogether and the rest of that sort of thing. I understand that they are a global entity, but still, you know, even if the shopping center, you got a store, you've got an Applebee's store, for example, that's located in a particular shopping center that's no longer drawing enough traffic to support Applebee's and some of the other stores that are there, so they close it down. Okay, but we haven't lost the people who used to shop there. You know, okay, they may not be going to the number one shopping center anymore, but they're still here. In theory, they still have to eat lunch and dinner and maybe breakfast. You would think that even though, okay, they close now, we're going to close down the store that's located in the shopping center, but we're going to open up another one 4 blocks away at the intersection of Highway, you know, 120 and 33. But we're not doing that. We are, and it's evidence that people aren't buying the food at restaurants. That's an entirely different thing. We're not just talking about we've closed restaurant number one and we're going to relocate to place number two. That's not what we're doing. We're closing restaurant number one and we're locating out of the country. It indicates that people aren't spending the money even on lunch and dinner. And that's that's a little bit scary. I'm not saying this is proof that that's exactly the phenomenon we're watching, but that's at least an implication that seems reasonable in here. We can sit back and say, okay, they're not buying any more shirts at JCPenney's. They're not buying any more cars at Ford. Okay, I kind of get that. There are expenses involved, but they're not even eating out?
Al, have you seen how many restaurants, how many choices they have to eat out there?
Well, that would you would think.
I don't think it's going to hurt the American people one bit if Applebee's or IHOP doesn't reopen their stores.
No, but what I'm getting to is still
the thing of it is, did you
clientele.
Ever eat Applebee's or IHOP's food?
I didn't have an objection to IHOP. It wasn't anything extraordinary.
Well, no, you can't mess up eggs, you know. But I've seen the pictures when they are advertised on television. You see these plates full of pancakes with syrupy and whipped cream piled to the sky. It's
it looks like
I don't know
a
how
perfect
many times
fix
you can
if
eat
you're
that.
Diabetic. Yeah. This is the place for you.
you could probably bring in all kinds of different things. What I'm looking at it is they're not getting the income, and yeah, I do think people are probably cutting back from eating out. I mean, when we look at the amount of credit card debt that it's now matching back from 2008, over $1.02 plus trillion dollars in revolving credit card charges they've been living off of. Wages are basically stagnant for how long? Yeah, they don't have the money to go out. When you have health insurance that people are, a family of four probably costs, good Lord, $20,000-$30,000 a year for their health insurance for a family
of
four.
That's crazy.
It is crazy. So, yeah, people don't have the disposable income to be eating out. Heck, even McDonald's. You go eat at McDonald's and it still costs you an arm and a leg. It's not that dollar hamburger anymore that you used to be able to go to and, you know,
dollar,
feed.
I remember
feed,
19 cents.
Yeah, and feed they a family
out at
of
19
four.
Cents.
Feed a family of four, you know, that's affordable and so forth. There, I mean, prices are outrageous and debt is prohibiting people from continuing their same pleasures that they have had. And it kind of goes against when you read about, of course, it's summer, it's vacation time, when you read about, you know, restaurants, the jobs that are being created, where are they being created at? Restaurants and bars and the hotels. So I think if you're good, you know, I think you can weather storms. But I think with these large malls not bringing the people to there, they're not sustaining. You know, and I don't think IHOP and Applebee's is on the same level as what you have your Italian and seafood place either.
Well, I agree with
you
that.
You know, so.
But just the same, even, you know, ordinary people. I mean, you don't have to get dressed up in this sort of thing, that's for sure. You don't need a tux to go to Applebee's or IHOP. But that's
like
all the more reason why ordinary people, you know, not rich people, ordinary people, they seem to be the implication of the story, the implication of the article, faint implication, not
maybe,
proof.
And maybe the people are now looking for value, too, with their money. You know, you go to Olive Garden, you go to the Red Lobster, you know, people, you'll probably get a little more value with their dollars, too. So, you know, that is a change. They're working hard and they want to spend, you know, they want to make sure that they're getting something in return.
What do you think this means for family owned and operated independent restaurants? Are they as likely to be pushed out of business as the major chains? Or will the major corporate chains like Applebee and IHOP, will they be under more financial pressure than maybe, you know, a good family restaurant, which are rare and hard to find right now, kind of, but I get some mama in there, she's cooking Italian food, she knows what she's doing, dad's running the bar or whatever. Are we going to see an increase for, you know, these independent restaurants? Will they tend to survive, or do you think they'll go down?
I think a lot of it, I hear the music, that means we're going to go down. I can answer that when we get back. I think location is one thing, but I think quality, your food has to taste good, and people will come. Make it good, and people will come, just like that movie with the baseball field.
Mm-hmm.
Build it, and they will come.
Build it, they will come. All right, we'll take a break. Last set of commercials for the program, and we will be right back. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
Oh, I guess we were finishing it up with IHOP, and you had asked me a question. I said I'd answer it when we came back, but...
Yeah, I was wondering whether you think, will the corporate restaurants be able to survive this problem better than privately owned and operated restaurants, little mom and pops? You know, they decide they can, Mexican restaurants, whatever. Will the private independent restaurants tend to do better than the corporate, or vice versa?
I don't know. Again, it just comes down to the quality of food that they serve. I mean, your corporate restaurants, you know, it's easier for them to move around, rebuild. They've got the world that they can travel around and they can adjust. They had difficult times during the Great Recession back in 2008 when gasoline went up to $5-6. There wasn't anybody out in town eating. They were putting all their money into gas. And yeah, a lot of these corporate restaurants hurt, and they hurt big. They closed and so forth, and things turn around and, you know, people go back in and they, you know, they survive. So I'm not sure if things collapse and people went through. Yeah, they're going to hurt. Everybody will hurt. The family-owned restaurants, I believe that if they provide a good product, and I told you during the break, it's like people don't know what good food is anymore.
Yeah.
People have come to accept substandard in everything, not just in food, but everything, the quality, the value. You know,
a bunch of carbohydrates with sauce on it.
Yeah,
that's what most of the food is right now.
Yeah, and if it doesn't even taste good, you know, it's people still accept.
It does taste fattening, though, Melody, and that's comforting for a lot of us. That's fattening. I'll take two of those. Those are fattening. Yeah, give me two of those.
You can go to a restaurant and order lobster. And you can have two different restaurants, and one could be real bad and the other one could be excellent, the service and everything else. But they ask high dollars now.
Yep.
And tips. My gosh, you're not even allowed to choose the tip you want to leave the waitress, whether she did a good job or a bad job, he or she. They automatically, a lot of restaurants anymore just automatically deduct.
Part of the problem, and you're talking about a lot of the corporate restaurants automatically place those deductions.
Little ones too.
Well, I don't know about the little ones. Yeah, I'm just speculating, but I have a hunch, and just no evidence, but a hunch. But the corporations, they'll watch every nickel and dime, and they're geared to do it. All right, they will inventory every swizzle stick at the bar. Right, this isn't mom and pop. They get it done. You know, whatever. I don't know. You know, it's more casual. But the point is that the corporations, in order to make, if they can save a nickel an order, that's big money for them. They calculate and they look, because they say, look, we've got 3,500 restaurants out here, and we're serving 500 people a day in each one of the restaurants, and if we can save a nickel an order, well, you do the multiplication, next thing you're saying, we can send, you know, this is enough to send the CEO on a nice vacation. So they're going to do this. And the public, I think, notices when they are being beat out of a nickel. I think we understand that. We can pick up on it. They say, oh, they're cutting corners. And the corporations, I think they think we're too dumb to pick up on it. I think maybe a lot of us are not that dumb. We do see, my God, they've cut back on the salads. It's a smaller portion of soup. It's whatever. They're cutting corners on this thing, and they are putting us in a position where they are, I don't know, not respecting us. Right? They're just saying, move them in here and get as squeeze as much money out of them. I mean, it's almost like dealing with modern medicine. Used to be where the doctor came in to take care of you. Now you get an audience with the doctor. He writes a prescription from the pill for the pills and sends you down the road. Something like that is happening as these restaurants become more and more desperate and more efficient and more frugal. And people see it and it discourages them. Say, I don't want to eat there. It's not fun. You understand. You know, there's a problem. So we'll see how far that goes, and we'll see if that's even accurate information or accurate opinion. We'll watch to see. Maybe that'll turn out to be halfway correct, and maybe not. We'll watch and see. But it's disturbing because it's another one of those leaves in the breeze that we talk about on this program on a fairly regular basis. It just indicates we're sitting at the edge of something here. And maybe we're going to just skate right around it. Maybe we're going to be just fine. But maybe not. Right? And again, it's like being on the Titanic. Maybe we're going to hit an iceberg, and maybe we're not. And they say the ship can't be sunk. You know, Janet Yellen said she doesn't think we're going to have another major economic downturn in our lifetimes. Right? Well, I don't know. She might know. Might be true. But just in case she's wrong, does it make, you know, in applying that to the Titanic analogy, does it make good sense to maybe get yourself a life jacket and keep it close at hand? Just on the off chance. I know the ship can't possibly sink and everybody's doing their job and we're making record time on the ship going headed for New York City and everything's going great. But just the same, maybe it's not such a bad idea to get hold of one of those life preservers. And I'm inclined to think, yeah, get the life preserver. Get it. Because we keep seeing strange little things. We keep seeing leaves in the breeze. And we are inclined and encouraged to, when we see these leaves, to think they're just random events. They don't mean anything. They don't have any serious implication. And yet, I think they do. And I think they add up collectively to say there is going to be a serious problem, and maybe not so long from now. Here's a little article. Gold has outperformed stocks this century.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's been a good year for gold so far. It's up over 10% to date. It's even been a good century for gold, meaning from the onset of this century, 2004 on forward. It says it's easy to get caught up in day-to-day fluctuations in the price of gold and lose sight of the bigger picture. Price of gold tomorrow probably doesn't matter too much to you, but the price of gold in 10 years or 5 years or a year from now, that should be a lot more significant. And we get discouraged sometimes. We watch the volatility going up and down and up and down and up and down. It kind of discourages us. And yet when you take a longer-term view, you say, wait a second, this is a good investment. Goes on and says, all eyes have been on the stock market. The Dow cracked 22,000 this week. However, as an article in Forbes pointed out, gold has actually outperformed the Standard & Poor 500 by 86% so far this century, meaning since the year 2000. In the last 17 years, gold has outperformed the Standard & Poor's by 86%. Implication is that gold is a viable asset. Gold is a viable investment. It does better than some things that are more conventional. And it's likely to do much better in the future. So it's just, you know, take a look at that long term.
Well, gold has outperformed the U.S. dollar mm-hmm. in over 100 plus years.
Yeah.
So it has protected people's purchasing power. You can buy the same thing today with that gold coin plus some than you could with that U.S. dollar from 100 years ago.
I understand.
That U.S. dollar 100 years ago won't buy you, doesn't buy you, barely buys you penny candy anymore.
Yeah, it's hard to believe. I've talked about it before, but my first job back around 1958, 59, I don't remember, but it was back there sweeping floors at Blau Motors, 85 cents an hour after school. I'd only work an hour and a half, 2 hours a night. All right? How much can that be? You're talking about $1.50 to $2 a day. Doesn't sound like anything, but it was silver dollars, which today are going to run 18, 20 bucks a piece. And if they weren't suppressed, probably more than that. And the point was, when I was a kid, I was making as much money in 7th and 8th grade working just a couple hours a night as my hourly wage was, at least was in terms of purchasing power, was comparable to a lot of grown men today. Only got 85 cents an hour, but it was 85 cents in silver, right? Not paper, silver. And it's the sort of information you look at and you wonder, why did we give that up? Somebody came up, this is intelligent. You know what? It's the same kind of crapola that they're going to feed us when they want to get rid of our cash. So, it's to stop the terrorists and prevent money laundering and get the criminals and rest of that sort of thing. But in the end, the only one who's going to get got when they take away our cash, if they take away our cash, are the ordinary Americans. It just says the only ones who really were got when they took away the gold were ordinary Americans, and the only one who were got when they took away the silver were you and me. And it is so sad, and it is so disconcerting, because money is not easily understood. And yet it is as important to us on an economic basis as oxygen is on a biological basis. We don't see oxygen. We don't see it in the air, blah, blah, blah. We got to have it. And we don't pay attention to it. We don't think about it. Who goes through life saying, look, there's oxygen over here, but not so much over here. Let's go in the first place where there's more oxygen. We don't even notice it. We don't pay any attention to it. And as a result, we can be bamboozled. We can be damaged. If we walk into a room, the air seems to be clear. I assume there's oxygen. What if there's not? We can be fooled. Our ignorance of money is the same thing. Most people, the only thing they know about money is how to count it. And you try to explain it to people, and so you try to explain some of the political and legal implications as to whether you have real money or currency or fiat currency, and it's like you're speaking in tongues. It's not easy to communicate, and I don't blame people for not necessarily understanding, but I do blame people for not realizing that this is something you have to understand, because your survival can depend on it. You must make the effort to understand the difference between money and currency, and between specie and fiat, and between asset-based and debt-based. And none of us, not one man in a thousand, pays any attention to those ideas. If it was one man in ten who actually understood money pretty well, this country would be enormously more prosperous, probably more free. A lot of advantages would run our way if we understood money was something other than just counting. But, you know, the average person can't really tell you what's the fundamental difference between what are the fundamental differences between real money, fiat currency, and monopoly money. And the average person will say, well, I know monopoly money is just for a game. Yeah, so is a fiat currency. Most people don't get that. They can't imagine it. And if you tell them that, they just look at you like you're crazy. But
we had someone send something in. We had questions on that Osprey. Yep. He said that it is classified as a Vestal aircraft that has a vertical takeoff and landing capacity. Yep. And if he recalls, it is a heavy lift assault craft.
Well, maybe.
Maybe, yeah.
Maybe. But even so, again, the Marines have more. They have jets, they have fighters, I assume they have, or they're getting F-35s.
Yeah, it isn't the fact that they don't have other things.
Why did you shut everything down?
it isn't the fact that they don't have other things. To me, the fact is the timing. And for 24 hours, like, what's the point? It's like when people say, well, you should have 5 or 10% of gold in your portfolio. My question, what's the point? It's kind of like the same thing. What's the point? So, just an interesting.
Five or 10% is better than nothing, Melody. It may not be adequate, but it's better than nothing. I give them that. It's a start. And it's one of the things sometimes, if you get
really
that,
isn't.
Maybe you'll start to pay attention. And all of a sudden, you'll begin to, wait a second. You know, the best item in my portfolio for the last 10 years has been gold and silver. You start to pick up on that, and you start to realize it from personal experience. You can sit back and all of a sudden
My point now is, if somebody has $500,000 and they end up putting $50,000 in gold, that $50,000, from what people, the reason people tell them to buy the $50,000 is to protect their $500,000. The $50,000 doesn't cut it.
I get it.
Is my point. You know, so agreed, it is a start, but the logic and the reasoning from Wall Street that you should only have 5 or 10%, what's the point? If they were accurately protecting their clients and really care about their clients' portfolio and what they have, they would recommend something a little bit more than 5. Because I'll tell you what, the majority of Wall Street portfolios, when people recommend 5 and 10%, most of them have 5%.
Well,
they don't want the people to own gold. Why? They don't make any commissions off of it.
That's right. Once you buy it, you hang on to it. They want you to buy some paper, and they'll sell you more paper next week, and the week after that, they'll sell you different paper. Dump that and get this new, and they keep making commissions every time. We're out of time. I want to thank all of you for listening. Melody and I'll be back on Monday. I hope you have a good weekend. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Todd, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night. I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my dreams, I have a plan. If I got me a well-being